You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome to the program. It's hour one on this Tuesday. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. We'll check in with the Chargers. Justin Herbert will join us coming up next hour. Buda Baker, the Arizona Cardinals safety, a little bit later on as well. Your phone calls always welcome. 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle at DP Show. Say good morning to those watching on Peacock. It's free. Download the app. Watch all 3 hours. And, of course, our radio affiliates numbering over 360 cities around the country. Rams handled the Bears last night 24-10. And I already saw a headline calling for Matt Nagy's head in Chicago. That seems like a little bit of an overreaction, but we'll dive into that game coming up. Tonight, Rays Dodgers game 6. It's Blake Snell versus the Dodgers bullpen. Now, Tony Gonsolin is going to be the opener. We saw this last week in game 2 where he served as an opener for a band of 6 relievers, 3 lefties, 3 righties. I don't know what's going to happen tonight. You got Walker Buehler waiting in game 7, if there is a game 7. I guess all hands on deck when you get to a game 7. But this is the modern philosophy here, where although Blake Snell was great his last start, and you want him to go as long as you can, we've seen this philosophy with both these pitching staffs. Hey, let's just go to the bullpen. It used to be you didn't want to get to the bullpen. If you were a manager, you wanted to have your starter out there as long as possible. That hasn't been the case. But the concern I have with the Dodgers is the Rays could help their cause if they get to the Dodgers bullpen as early as possible. Because if you break down the pitching in the World Series with LA, the starters, the ERA is 2.66 and the Rays are batting 1.85. The Dodgers bullpen, the ERA is 5.57 and the Rays are batting 2.72. That's your modern approach to baseball. Turn it over to your bullpen. But what happens when your bullpen isn't very good? We'll find out tonight when these two battle in game 6. Back to the Bears, that game last night. It was 24-10. It felt like the Rams had this game, that it wasn't that close. And the Rams have been a good story this year. What I loved is this was a chance to reintroduce Aaron Donald to the rest of the country. Jared Goff also maybe a coming out party again. And, you know, they run the football, got a pretty good defense here, but it helps when you're facing a Bears offense that didn't score an offensive touchdown last night. And I brought this up the other day about we're seeing these teams that are flawed because they don't play defense. And I had an NFL scout who heard me yesterday talking about the Seahawks, and they need some defensive help as well. He said, this is all about offense. Nobody plays defense. All you want to do is play offense. This is all about offense now. And, you know, the Bears don't have offense. He goes, they got good defense. They don't have any offense. You're not going anywhere. With a good to great offense, you can go places. That's just the way the game is. And you saw that on display last night. The Bears couldn't muster anything with Nick Foles. And, they, you know, it got a little bit saucy after the game because Nick Foles, apparently during a pregame meeting or prior to the game, what happens is your analyst will come in and your play-by-play guy will come in and you sit down with a coach, quarterback, maybe, you know, a defensive player and Khalil Mack, and you just talk. And you're trying to get background information. You know, sometimes they'll get specific and say, hey, you know, we might use this, we might use that player, we might use that package, we might try to surprise them with doing something like this. I don't know what happened when Brian Griese, he's one of the analysts on, you know, Monday Night Football, he sits down with Nick Foles, and Nick Foles talks about how, hey, kind of having a hard time getting the play called in and then getting everybody ready to call it. And, you know, so Griese drops this bomb like 4 minutes to go in the game. And I don't know if he knew what he had. I don't know why he waited until 4 minutes to go in the game instead of sort of giving that as one of the storylines to follow. But here's Brian Griese during last night's game talking about his conversation with Nick Foles.
We were talking to Nick Foles yesterday, and he said, you know, sometimes play calls come in, and I know that I don't have time to execute that play call. And, you know, I'm the one out here getting hit. And sometimes the guy calling the plays, Matt Nagy, he doesn't know how much time there is back here. And so that's something that they have to get worked out.
Okay. That's late in the game that he's bringing this up. That's where you start the game and you have keys to the game. And that's where Steve Levy says to Brian Griese, what should we be looking for on the Bears' offensive side of the ball? Hey, Nick Foles told me this a couple of days ago or prior to the game that he and Matt Nagy aren't on the same page, which I find absolutely incredible because Matt Nagy and Nick Foles have been at like four other stops in the NFL together. They're attached at the hip. They know each other quite well. And here they are reunited in Chicago, and somehow they can't get the play in. Well, this is being said during the game. Matt Nagy and Nick Foles have no idea that this is being said during the game. They go into the press conference, and somebody asked Nick Foles about it. This is what he had to say.
That was definitely a miscommunication with Brian and I. You know, we do these pregame conversations the day before the game just to give them information. That conversation, Coach Nagy and I have a great conversation on the sidelines. So there might be times where we go through it beforehand and say, hey, what do you think? And there's times where you got to get the ball out quick and whatnot. But in those situations, like Matt and I have a great relationship on the sideline with conversations and everything. I think, you know, in that situation with Brian, it was just a miscommunication of words because that's not what I was trying to bring across in that conversation.
I don't know what the conversation was. A lot of times what happens is you'll have conversations. There is an inference that this is off the record. You have two quarterbacks, Griese, a former quarterback, and Nick Foles. Foles might be just talking to him from one quarterback to another. But that meaning is on the record. And if you're going to share something like that, that's why I don't know why Brian Griese waited till, you know, the fourth quarter to bring this up. This should have been a storyline that we would be able to keep an eye on. Because I didn't think Foles had time. I thought Aaron Donald was very disruptive. You know, the defense was really good. He couldn't step into his throws. He had a couple of situations where he could have had touchdown passes. But, you know, I'm going to give the Rams a little bit of credit with putting the pressure on him. Then you had Matt Nagy. He's the Bears head coach. That he had this comment on Brian Griese's comment.
I don't know. You'll have to, whenever you talk to Nick, just kind of see where he's at with that. Nick and I have a pretty good relationship, and he hasn't said, I mean, he'll probably explain what he meant by that.
Okay. I don't know how big a deal this is.
Pretty good.
But they have a pretty good relationship. That was the only part of that that, you know, when I heard that comment, it's like, uh-oh. They probably had a really good relationship prior to Nick Foles telling Brian Griese about that. Now they just have a good relationship, kind of good. Yeah, Paul.
If your neighbor and his wife are arguing out front, you say, how are things going over there? Yeah, we got a pretty good relationship. What are you thinking when you go back to the house?
Yeah, McLovin.
But everyone knows the deal. You bring in Nick Foles, you're getting fire quotes left and right all the time. Deal with that guy.
Yeah. He didn't say, you know, he took it out of context. He said there was a miscommunication there, which is an interesting way to describe, hey, I just told you something that I thought was probably off the record. And you dropped a bombshell on me. Yes, Paul.
Any chance this was option three and Nick Foles was saying, like, hey, when Coach Nagy and I talk about plays, I say there's certain plays I can't do because the offensive line's not going to give me time. And he was maybe calling out his offensive line and the lack of time in the pocket, not necessarily the coach himself, because that's how it's playing to some people.
Yeah. I saw this headline, Chicago Bears time to fire Matt Nagy after week six loss to the Rams. Is it time the Bears admit to the real problem and fire head coach Matt Nagy? Dan Orlovsky of the Mothership, former NFL quarterback, he tweeted after rewatching the Monday night game between the Rams and Bears, the biggest takeaway, the coaching gap between Sean McVay and Matt Nagy is enormous. Like enormous, whatever you think it is, times it by 10. Woo! All righty. You know, after the game was really interesting. The game itself wasn't interesting at all. Yes, Todd?
Who goes to who first once it becomes public knowledge, this greasy miscommunication thing? Is it for the coach to go to Nick, or does Nick need to go to the coach to straighten this out?
Is it who or whom?
Whom.
Oh, whom.
Who goes to whom?
I'm going to say Nick Foles probably goes to coach.
But if there's not a problem, do you go to coach?
I go to coach to make sure there's not a problem.
It's like everybody's talking about it, so there's a problem.
Yeah.
So you got to be like, "That coach, that's not what I said."
You don't want this to expand. You want it to contract. And if you go to Matt Nagy and you say, "Hey, coach, this is what happened." Because if I'm Matt Nagy, my first question is, Nick, what did you tell Brian Griese? And was it on the record? And then he can tell you whatever he said. Because right now it's a miscommunication. And we did call for the parties involved in this, including Brian Griese. But if I'm the coach, I just say, hey, come on in and let's talk about this. How did it get to this point? Yeah, McLovin.
I was going to pitch a poll question. Would you bet a week's pay if the Bears make the playoffs or not? They're 5-2.
Oh, let me see their record here. I thought that they were a playoff team. You know, I said, you know, I didn't buy into the record, but, you know, you beat who's in front of you. You know, when we start to look at some of these teams, I don't know how good some of these teams are. Because of the injuries, because of the divisions that you're in, what happens first half of the season with your schedule, second half of the season. So you got, they got New Orleans, Tennessee, and Minnesota coming up, the next three games. Green Bay, Detroit, Houston, Minnesota, Jacksonville, Green Bay.
That's not tough. I mean, New Orleans, by the way, this week, I mean, the Bears... It's the first time New Orleans has been outside all time. New Orleans has one play, throw it to Kamara and hope he wiggles through. I feel like that's a win.
Well, they host the Saints. They host the Vikings. Then they're at Tennessee, at Green Bay. Detroit and Houston are winnable. They're at Jacksonville, and they end up with Green Bay. What's it going to take? Nine wins? Can they get nine wins? Feels like that. They can't generate any offense. I mean, that
usually precludes you from entering the playoffs.
Well, no, the Bears, you know, they were a defensive-minded team when they went to the Super Bowl. They didn't have a great quarterback. They had an opportunistic defense back then. They always have, like, a great safety or defensive back, like Mike Brown or Peanut Tillman. Like, those are your star players. Lance Briggs. You know you're in trouble if, hey, we got some stars, man. Who do you got? Mike Brown, Peanut Tillman.
Eddie Jackson has scored last night again. That guy, he's the new Mike Brown.
By the way, Akeem Hicks was like basically the best member of the Rams offense last night.
Oh, man.
The amount of penalties he gets.
Stupid penalties. Yes, McLovin.
I think the problem is David Montgomery, that guy, the Bears running back, it's 2 or 3 yards on every single. They're the worst run team. Yeah. That's why, like, the inside Bears analysts say, like, if they're not going to run the ball, they can't do it.
I like how we're talking about the Bears today. Like, if the Bears weren't on Monday Night Football and this was a Sunday afternoon game, we wouldn't be talking about it. Although it is a little juicy about, you know, Nick Foles and his coach and Matt Nagy. Imagine being 5-2 and people want you fired. Meanwhile, you got a 2-5 team in Dallas and we're like, hey, you know what? Here's Stephen Jones, the executive vice president. He's not just the vice president of the Cowboys. He's the executive vice president, and he's Jerry's son. Stephen Jones talking about the head coach, Mike McCarthy.
I think we're going in the right direction. I think Coach McCarthy and his staff, it's just going to take time for them to implement what they do and the way they play. We put a lot of work into Coach McCarthy and what his, what his track record was.
All righty. I'm inspired. Yes, Paulie.
He sounded like if Chris Collinsworth and Jerry Jones got together, the voice. It sounded like a combo, those two.
Let's play it again.
I think we're going in the right direction. I think Coach McCarthy and his staff, it's just going to take time for them to implement what they do and the way they play.
I can buy that.
A lot of work.
Stephen Jones laced with a little Chris Collinsworth in there. Yeah. Yeah, McLovin.
I have a Matt Nagy question. Do you think you would recognize him if he came in without a Bears visor?
No.
I can't picture his face in my head at all.
No.
There's nothing about him.
He just got a visor.
It's surgically attached.
Yeah. It's just a visor. By the way, it's not surgically attached. It was Hall of Fame coach Bill Parcells that said, "You are what your record says you are." And I don't think that slogan applies to the Chicago Bears. They're 5-1 going into last night. And I don't know if anybody bought into them as an elite team there. And last night, that assumption was confirmed. They were on full display, all the flaws there. And, you know, Nick Foles is a great reliever. He's one of those guys that, man, hey, we need a little boost. It's a big spot, but he just doesn't feel like he's a starter. And that's a problem because Mitchell Trubisky doesn't feel like a starter or a reliever either. And I'm wondering if they go back to Mitchell Trubisky. Have they already seen everything they need to see out of Mitchell Trubisky, and you just want to get through this season, and then you're going to clear the decks? And then maybe Nick Foles is your backup. Maybe you trade for a quarterback. Khalil Mack is still unblockable, and they've snuck into the playoffs with defense before, and maybe that's the case this year. Nobody bought into them at 5-1, and nobody is buying into them at 5-2. Maybe we should talk about the Rams. It's a little cheerier there. Aaron Donald, just to remind us that aside from, I guess, Patrick Mahomes, like the best position player in football is Aaron Donald. And the fact that he has, what, seven and a half sacks going into that game, he gets double teamed every play, basically, because you have to. And the disruption of going up the middle, it's rare when you have somebody in that position who has that many sacks, because you have your speed guys, your edge guys. The disruption that he creates is different than, you know, 99% of your pass rushers. Because I can, you know, I can shade one side of the field. I can always keep my eye on one side of the field. Aaron Donald is coming right at you. And these quarterbacks who try to set up in the pocket, now I get them outside of their comfort zone. And that's just basically to do with Aaron Donald. It was fun to watch him. Not fun to play against him, I'm sure, but it was fun to watch him last night. The Bears are last in the NFL in rushing yards per game, last in rushing touchdowns, and they're 30th in yards rushing per carry. Those are ominous stats there. And the Bears defense and run the football, and it's defense-ish, but they can't run the football. Yeah, Paul.
Is there anything else to talk about? Is there like Dak Prescott's contract? Or, I'm a Bears fan. I don't like when they're on national TV. When they're on a Sunday 1 o'clock game, I'm not kidding. Like when you sit down as a Chicago Bears fan or a team, any team that's not really that good historically or the past couple generations, you sit down and there's no other options. You kind of have to watch the whole game through, so it's painful. And you have to stay in case they come back. You can't bail. So, but if the Bears are playing 1 o'clock on a Sunday, I could peek, I could look, and then if it goes ugly, I'm like, I got to watch something else. It's not pleasant. And I think a lot of people will understand, sometimes watching your team play on national TV is not pleasant.
It's not you're watching your team, it's other people are watching your team.
Yes, it's like the airing of the laundry.
And then everybody goes, what's wrong with your team? God, team, your team sucks.
You walked in today and all I heard over my shoulder, it's dead quiet in the studio because it's just me and Fritzy here. All of a sudden I hear, you're Bears.
It's true.
That's it. Not how you doing. Good morning.
Molly's got his back to me at the computer, and I just walk by. You're Bears.
That's it.
Yes, McLovin.
But when they beat the Bucks, there wasn't a single mention of the Bears. It was all Tom Brady holding up four fingers. They weren't even like a sub-story of that. I don't think we mentioned the Bears once after that game, did we?
No, because it's always about Tom Brady.
I don't even know how they won that game, by the way. I don't remember an offensive touchdown in that game.
Can you check and see, did the Bears beat the Buccaneers? Feels like they did. Maybe the Bears should follow like Major League Baseball's philosophy with your pitching staff. Like you start Trubisky as your opener, and then you bring in like three or four quarterbacks. You know, maybe that would be the way.
Or play to play, just run them in back and forth, and get rid of the headset stuff.
No, the Cowboys did that. Tom Landry did that. He did that with Roger Staubach and Craig Morton. Like sometimes it used to be they would have their guard would be the messenger. Guard would be on the sidelines, get the play from the coach, and then he would go in. And then he would tell the quarterback the play. There was one season where Roger Staubach and Craig Morton were they were interactive quarterbacks, which is crazy. But Tom Landry would have Morton go in, and then Roger Staubach would come out. I don't know how long they did it. I just remember going, this is crazy. And I was probably 10 at the time and understood it. Yeah, Paul.
I love when that happens. I think when Ron Jaworski was in his last years in Philly and Randall Cunningham just came in the league, they would swap him in for a couple plays at a time, and Randall would run more than throw. But can you imagine the defense looking at Ron Jaworski, who's basically immobile? I mean, he's a statue.
Yeah.
And then you bring in Randall Cunningham for the next play and how you had to change your defense.
Yes, McClellan.
I was there. It was third and long. It was the we had season tickets to the Eagles for that era, and Randall will come in third and 21 and make it like every
somehow make something happen. All right, we'll come up with a poll question. As I mentioned, Justin Herbert from the Chargers next hour and Buda Baker, Arizona Cardinals safety. How long into the interview with Buda Baker do I bring up DK Metcalf chasing him down from behind? Do we just tear the Band-Aid off and go, hey, have you seen the game film yet? And what happened when Coach, you know, had the Buda Baker DK Metcalf play? How many times did he play it and rewind it? Yes, Todd.
I think you get it out of the way early. And from his tweets and some of the comments he's made, it seems like he's resigned to the fact that that's forever going to follow him. And, you know, they ended up winning the game, so he can deal with that.
Yeah, it was a great play by DK Metcalf. He understood it was a great play, but they did win. And it was a great play by Buda Baker on MVP front runner Russell Wilson Jr. III. All righty. We'll come up with a poll question. Phone calls are welcome. Emails, tweets. Operators are standing by. We'll take a break. It's 22 after the hour. This is The Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to The Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. All four NFC West teams are over 500 through week 7. It has happened three previous times in history that a division had all of its teams over 500 through week 7. 1984 AFC West, 2005 NFC East, 2016 NFC East.
Stat of the day, stat of the day, dap, dap, stat of the day, stat of the day. Here comes that what? Stat of the day.
Pop. Niners roughed up the Patriots on Sunday, and Cam Newton did not look good again. And, you know, he said, look, it's on me. Now, he looked good post-game. He always looks good post-game. Well, not to everybody. Jeff Garcia is a former NFL quarterback, and he covers the 49ers now, I think NBC Sports Bay Area. And he went off on Cam Newton's post-game outfit.
You go into this game, 2 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. You throw, what, 3 more interceptions? You get yanked in the second half. There's nothing good going your way. Why are you dressing like that to bring more attention to yourself? I'd be trying to ask the equipment managers, put me in your jock sock cart and sneak me in the back door, and I'll show up on the field and do the best that I can.
Jeff, this sounds like you're speaking from too much experience here, okay? This sounds
experience. This just goes back to a couple years of just watching this guy and seeing him at the podium, but yet what he's doing on the field does not translate to being that guy.
Like,
and
Joe,
I just
Montana.
Feel like...
I mean, Joe Namath.
Yeah.
The fur coat.
When you predict you're going to win a Super Bowl and you go out and do it, wear whatever the hell you want. But, you know, right now, I'm not buying it.
Did anybody complain about what he was wearing when they were winning and he was the MVP and they went to the Super Bowl? Actually, they did. Yes, Eden.
Yeah, the funny thing is that after the Cam's post-game outfit was actually more subdued than what he normally wears. He wasn't really wearing anything all that crazy.
I don't know if you pick your outfit thinking you're going to get blown out at home. And we always wondered, did Tom Brady have a second outfit, you know, like a losing outfit, so you show up and then nobody comments on your tweed jacket here? But Cam Newton on the Greg Hill Show responded to Jeff Garcia's criticism.
The fact that he's a former player, you know, he has every right to say that. And until that happens, then so be it. But that's another opinionated theory. And it's fair to say. So, I mean, I know I come off to so many different people, so many different ways, and that's fine. And he's, you know what? He's exactly right. But I'm not changing the way I dress.
All right. So He's siding with Jeff Garcia. Yeah, maybe I should have a different outfit, but I'm not changing. Yeah, Paul.
Does he have problems? Jeff Garcia have problems with Gardner Minshew's outfit after games? Minshew or Fitzpatrick wearing a 70s shirt and a long beard? That seems to draw attention to himself.
I'm not sure.
I didn't hear him call those guys out.
I'm not sure who bothers Jeff Garcia, why it bothers Jeff Garcia, but you just blew out the Patriots. I'd probably be focusing on an incredible win in New England, not what Cam is wearing to a post game. I don't know how players respond to this. You know, they're guys who wear some pretty flamboyant things into the locker room. I mean, Russell Westbrook and what he wears, or James Harden and what he wears. You know, remember Dwayne Wade? Dwayne Wade showed up as if he was going to the Metropolitan Ball. But they were in the NBA Finals and nobody had a problem with that. But Jeff Garcia doesn't like what Cam wears to the game or after the game. Now, if they won, is it okay to wear that? I'm not quite sure I understand what the rules are. Maybe just bring two outfits. I got one if we win, and it's something really subdued, some neutral colors, just so nobody will get upset when I get on the podium. I would be more upset with the way Cam played than with the way Cam dressed. Yes, Paulie?
What if Cam went out and got one of those hoodie sweatshirts that Belichick wears, all cut up, and wore it after the game, win or lose? Exactly, dressed exactly like Belichick. Or go back and buy a Tom Brady outfit. The exact outfit that Tom Brady wore like 6 years ago, wore that. See what the reaction is.
This program brought to you by Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's, your flannel destination for the whole family this fall. Right now, annual Flannel Fest at the retail locations across North America. Shop their current flannel deals in-store or online today. By the way, Traeger got something for you. Expand your recipe playbook with the 6-in-1 versatility of Traeger. Wood Pellet Grill right now. Free shipping when you enter the promo code Dan at checkout. Head to TraegerGrills.com/DP Show to start shopping or check one out at a dealer near you. Scott in Maryland joins us today. Good morning, Scott. What's on your mind?
Hey, Dan. Hi, Scott. 5'9", 165. Mm-hmm. I'm a diehard Steelers fan. My wife's a diehard Ravens fan. To make matters worse, we live in Maryland. So I wasn't sure if you or the Danettes had any similar experiences with your significant others. Any advice would be great.
Well, what are you? How to approach the game this weekend? Or do you go to neutral corners? Do you go watch the game elsewhere?
We sometimes go in separate rooms, watch the game on other TVs. But, I mean, we're cordial throughout the entire year. Football season's a completely different story.
Well... You know, you took those wedding vows. Did you mention the Steelers or Ravens in your wedding vows?
Sure did.
Yeah, see? Probably should have. You guys got advice on this? My wife doesn't watch sports, so there's no go to a neutral corner here. Because one person likes another one team and you like another team. Yeah, Todd?
I'd say sit together and you watch it together and trash talk each other and just make it a... fun. Hopefully it doesn't get too out of hand. I don't think your marital bliss is on the line for a few hours. And just embrace the fact that you have a rivalry there and get dressed up in your respective teams and have fun with it.
I don't know. It gets tense there.
And if one gets upset, you walk out of the room before you say something you're going to regret.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're cordial. What, dude?
I think he might have to work on his marriage. And it's not just about the Steelers and the Ravens. He might have some other things he's got to work on there.
Yeah. That's fine. We just sit in different rooms.
Yeah.
But usually, when he knew she was a Ravens fan, she's a Ravens fan or he is?
She is, and they live in Maryland.
Okay. When they were dating, he knew. So she must be hot enough or great enough that it overcame that then. You're like, hey, I could look past the fandom.
If it's this important and he's calling up this show, then they should have put it in their wedding vows that had some kind of language in there until... the Ravens and Steelers do us part. Yes, McLovin.
He should have married a Browns fan because then he could gloat over every week.
No, a Bengal fan. No. The Browns are okay.
No, but Ben owns, has more wins in Browns Stadium than any Browns quarterback in history. He owns the Browns and the Bengals. But
yeah.
I think he's like a record setter in every Browns category.
If he says, honey, it's not going to work out, I got to marry a Browns fan. I'm sorry. How does that work in divorce court? You know, when the lawyer goes, hey, I understand it, you know. He can't be married to a Ravens fan.
Yeah, irreconcilable differences, that word is. Irreconcilable.
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 Was that a movie? Wasn't there a movie called Irreconcilable?
Desirable?
Differences.
Yeah, that.
Yeah. I don't know who's in it. Was Jack Nicholson in Irreconcilable Differences? Yes, McLovin.
I got Ryan O'Neal and Shelley Long.
Ooh.
With Drew Barrymore as the kid, 1984.
Yeah, dude.
Oh.
I kind of remember this. This is an unpleasant movie, as I recall.
Awful.
Mm. I think I saw it. I might have seen it.
What's the most unpleasant movie? Like, we're not like a horror movie, but we're couples or families.
Oh, you know what movie I hated? It was War of the Roses.
Oh,
I hated that movie. And it's, I know it's like a, you know, dark comedy or whatever. Yeah. I just thought it was awful.
Yeah, dark comedies always trip me up because I'm not really sure sometimes, like, where's the comedy? You know, you try to read into it a little bit and you go, is that funny?
Like, that movie was just people being mean to each other.
Yes. Yes, McLovin.
See, I was just talking yesterday about how painful Marriage Story with Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson. I did not enjoy that experience. It was good.
Yeah, because you just... Well, there was no fun in it. Like, you're going, oh, God, this is so heavy. Unless it made you feel better about your marriage or your relationship, you're like, oh, okay, I feel a little better. I'm not as screwed up as them. Yeah, Paul.
My wife was rewatching The Breakup with Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn the other day.
Don't tell me how it ends.
Okay. Oh, have you not seen it?
No, I did.
Oh. Well, the ending's the most interesting part. So if you haven't seen it, earmuff it. At the end, my wife and I, when we saw it the first time, it's a pretty rough movie. They get pretty terse towards each other when they break up.
And they were dating.
Yeah, in real life.
Yeah.
At the end, they don't get together. And at the end, my wife was like, oh, this is terrible. They're supposed to get together. And I was like, I love this movie that they didn't get together. That's dark, though. It's a darker ending.
I'm okay sometimes with an unhappy ending or a not happy ending.
Absolutely.
I am okay because it jolts you where you go, oh, wow. Instead of going... Oh, and then the music plays, and then they hold hands, and then they ride off into the sunset. There are times when you go, wow, what just happened here? Yeah, McLovin.
Okay, this is a bit left turn, but there's a movie called 50-50.
I don't think there's a left turn applies to this show. When you say there's a left turn.
Right.
Not the start of today, anyway.
Yeah. If you keep taking left turns, you get back to where you started.
So it's with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Seth Rogen and 50-50.
We were
just watching it. Yeah, it's about a guy who has cancer. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen it. But, you know, the question is, I hadn't seen it. It's been 10 years old. At what point can people tell me what happens at the end?
Oh, I think you could talk about the ending after 10 years.
Well, I mean, the question is, did he live or not? Obviously, it's called 50-50.
Yeah.
I still don't know.
Oh, you don't know if he lived?
No, I've never seen it.
Oh.
Have you seen it?
No, I don't want to ruin it for you. May he rest in peace. What?
There's a reason there wasn't a sequel. No 50-50 part two.
2575 was the next one. Yes, McLovin.
That's the same voice you used for Paulie's Bears this morning, by the way.
Yeah, your Bears. Yeah, Paulie.
There's a movie, if you want to talk dark and ugly, it's called In the Company of Men. It was released about 20 years ago. I think it's an independent film. It was with Aaron Eckhart. You probably know him. He's been in a lot of movies. It's his first movie. It is dark. It's about two mid-level executives who get... I have to go to the middle of nowhere to work for a couple months, and they decide to do something really mean. It's a fantastic but dark movie.
Mm.
People who watch it may think I'm, you know, a bad recommendation, but it's fantastic. Mm. But it's very dark and very mean.
Yes, Todd.
I saw a movie a while back, and it was so disturbing. I ended up watching it like three or four times, called Would You Rather. This like rich millionaire invites people over to play a game. They have no idea this is going to be a deadly game. And they're each trying to impress this millionaire, billionaire, because they need money either for a sick relative or they just want to win a lot of money. And it turns out one by one, he's having them pick cards. Would you rather kill, you know, stab this one or do something or electrocute this old lady that's sitting across from me at the table? And one by one, they're killing each other off until there's like two left. It was like really, really uncomfortable. It was sick. Take a needle and take your eye out, or, you know, stab this old lady in the thigh. They're like, these are the choices they had to make. And they had 30 seconds to decide what they're going to do to stay in the game.
Yes,
you know what movie didn't need to be made? Manchester by the Sea.
Oh, I know.
No reason to make that movie. Ooh. There was no reason to make that movie or write that book. Yeah. Absolutely no reason.
Seton actually warned me not to watch it. I was getting ready to watch it. He goes, it's not going to be good for you, dude.
No. Nah,
and I passed. I went about 20 minutes. I'm like, I'm going
to
tap out.
No reason to make that movie.
Yeah.
I know your heart's broken. My heart's broken.
Some great acting in that movie, though.
Yeah, there really is. But damn, is that a sad movie.
Yes. Yes, Paul.
I like that Fritzy saw this horrendous, awful movie and saw it three or four times.
I was just taken aback by, I can't believe how dark and disturbing it is. I had to watch it again. And I like Brittany Snow, but that's besides the point. But it's really disturbing how they're all killing each other off to win some money from this guy. I couldn't believe it.
It's just a movie.
I know, but I got so involved.
It's not real.
I'm like, this woman, they're sticking this woman's head in a thing of water to see if she'll drown because that's what she chose over like shooting her friend across the table from her. So weird.
All right. Play of the day is up next. And this might be the first time we've ever featured a player at this position in our play of the day. That's next. This is the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Oh, my God.
The play, the play, the play of the day.
Runner left side, got it!
Check this out.
Hecker in the air.
Wow, that, what a kick.
That's Ted Ginn back there. And Hecker's done it again.
Oh, man.
How he booms this football.
Listen, this Rams special teams unit from last season was awful. And Hecker has made four impactful plays in this game. None bigger than that one right there.
That's courtesy of Monday Night Football on ESPN. Play of the day brought to you by Breeders' Cup, November 6th and 7th. The world's best thoroughbreds compete in 14 exhilarating races at the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Learn more at breederscup.com/2020. Catch all the action live on NBC Sports. Johnny Hecker, five punts, pinning the Bears inside their 10-yard line on every one of them. Since 2014, Hecker has 214 punts inside the 20, most in the NFL. Sean McVay gave him the game ball after the game. He punted that as well. I was just kidding. That's not true. I got cheap laughter there from the Dennis. Do we have a poll question that is Johnny Hecker?
Yes.
We do.
Okay. Would you rather be the best punter in the game, Johnny Hecker, or the worst starting quarterback in the game?
Worst starting quarterback in the game?
Yes. So you're one of 32 starters in the NFL. I know that's a little tricky with injuries, but say you're like week one starter.
Well, I'm guaranteed to be a starting punter for a long time if I'm the best punter in the game.
Right.
I'm not guaranteed to stay the starting quarterback if I'm the worst quarterback in the league.
You probably won't.
No. Johnny Hecker's career salary.
It's solid.
$19.6 million. He's 30 years of age. I don't know if he's going to the Hall of Fame, but I think he's making a real strong case to go to the Hall of Fame. And you got Ray Guy as the only punter in there. I don't know if they've ever considered another punter, but I would think that Johnny Hecker has a chance to be a Hall of Famer here. Yeah, Paul.
Hecker's 30 years old, so he's got about at least five more years of making money. So let's say he makes $35 million in his career. It's probably what he's going to make. If you could have Johnny Hecker's career of $35 million or Chase Daniel's career at $35 million, which is about what Chase is going to make, never really playing in an NFL game for any long period of time.
I would want to be Johnny Hecker because I affect the game. I'm in the game. I'm the best at what I do in the game. I'm an all-pro. And maybe a chance to go to the Hall of Fame. Yeah, McLevin.
What if you get like the whole package, like your college career? Because even the worst, you know, like Chase Daniel was a superstar in college, covered Sports Illustrated. You get a lot of glory coming up.
I'm not going to let you do that one.
No lifetime career, like no lifetime achievement.
No, no. What other poll questions do we have? Because
okay,
I didn't know if we settled on one or not.
Okay. Which of these struggling teams is most likely to pull off the upset next week? Patriots at Bills, Bears hosting the Saints, Cowboys at Eagles, which I believe is a Sunday night game. I have to check if that's in Philly. So who's riding the ship? Do any of those teams have a chance, you think?
Did you see where the Cowboys defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan, I thought he was on the hot seat, and then he shows up and he has a, he's interviewed or a press conference. He got Tabasco sauce in his eye. So
in real time too.
Yeah.
During the interview.
Yeah. I guess he had Tabasco sauce on his finger and he wiped his eye, and then all of a sudden his eye started watering. Oh, is that emblematic of what the season's been like in Dallas? Yes, McLovin.
But isn't it just like the Eagles are still completely decimated? I fear this Cowboys team. I have no idea why. I feel like the Eagles could just as easily fall apart as any other team in the NFCs.
Well, Dallas still has its defensive players.
Yeah.
They haven't lost their defensive players. They lost their offense. That's what I don't understand. This is the worst defense in Cowboys history. There's no reason for that unless we point at the defensive coordinator here and start with him. But still, you have that much talent. Those guys who are, they have six Pro Bowlers on that defense. And they all got paid. There's no excuse for that. Yeah, Paul.
I have to give you this. Johnny Hecker, the punter, has had more passing yards in six seasons than Chase Daniel had in six seasons. Chase Daniel had seasons where he had 10 passing yards, 12. Yeah. Johnny Hecker had 42, 37, 34 on fake punts. So there's seasons where Johnny Hecker, the punter, outpassed Chase Daniel, the quarterback. Back to you.
I don't know how they factor in a punter for the Hall of Fame. Is it basically what your return yardage, the net yardage? Is it inside the 20-yard line? He's been an All-Pro five times. Usually you get to that seven or eight All-Pro, not Pro Bowl, All-Pro, and then you're a Hall of Famer. Yeah, McLovin.
But you're still a specialist, though. You're not, in many people's eyes, you're not a real football player. That's just facts.
But you could still go. If I said you're going to the Hall of Fame as a punter, are you going to say, nah, I'm not really a football player?
Yes. I think most people are going to be like, yeah, you're a punter. I don't, you know, did Ray Guy play another position?
No, but he could have. I think they talked about him. He might have been a defensive back or a quarterback. He was about 6'4", 6'5". He was an athlete. Yeah, Todd.
And do you put their busts off to the side because they always want to kick it out of bounds inside the 10?
Oh, okay.
Let's put them on the side.
All right.
Out front.
Justin Herbert of the Chargers joining us in about 25 minutes. And Budda Baker, the Cardinals safety as well. 1 hour in the books. Two to go. Dan Patrick Show.